1 Samuel 18, I'll begin reading in verse 1. And it came to pass when he had made an end of speaking unto Saul, that's David who was doing the speaking, that the soul of Jonathan was knit with the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him, David, as his own soul. And Saul took him that day and would let him go no more home to his father's house. Then Jonathan and David made a covenant because he, Jonathan, loved him, David, as his own soul. And Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was upon him and gave it to David, and his garments even to his sword and to his bow and to his girdle. Now, when we think the word girdle, we think more of a girly type of garment, but it just meant the thing that kind of bound it all together. It's kind of changed, kind of evolved now in modern lingo, but back then it was just simply a contraption that kept all these things bound together. Now, in this series that we're looking at, this to the furtherance of the gospel, there's three parts that we've talked about: truth, friendship, and world evangelism. Now, we're back to the friendship part, which is the middle part. We began with the first part, which is truth. And that's important as we think about what we're talking about in friendship. And as we mentioned a couple of weeks ago, that when we're talking about friendship, we're talking about being friends with things in common, not just friends with everyone. And I think we ought to be friendly with everyone, but I'm talking about biblical friendship, and that biblical friendship is based on truth. And so we started by thinking and talking about, you know, what is truth, where do we find truth, the importance of truth. It's important this morning that we always recognize that there is a source of eternal, inerrant, infallible, preserved truth for us. Absolute truth. Now the world, many in the world, their head starts spinning when we use words like that. That there is absolute truth. So we come to the Word of God. This isn't simply words that have been compiled over centuries that express the thoughts of God. These are the very words of God preserved by God. He who, and say, well, how could God keep it? How do you know someone didn't change it? Well, the same God who inspired it is the same God who preserved it. Now, if I can trust God for giving it to us straight, can I not trust Him for keeping it straight as well? And so I believe that this book I hold in my hand is the source of absolute truth. Now, eventually, as we get through this series, we'll get to world evangelism. And that's really the whole focus, the purpose, the outcome of these things, that we have this responsibility to share the truth. Now, we begin with truth, we end with the idea of sharing truth, world evangelism, but in the middle, we're talking about this idea of friendship. Now, it may seem odd for some people why this is a part of the equation. Now, when we think about world evangelism, this should be something. Now, I'm going to hit this several times in a lesson. This will be the first time I hit it. World evangelism should be something we take seriously as a church. It is our job. If the Lord allows us, we get into the third Sunday of April, our church will be 10 years old. Now, 9 of those years, the first year I don't think we're involved in mission giving that way, but 9 of those years we've been involved in trying to reach the world with the gospel. Now it's important that we as Grace Baptist Church understand it's our responsibility. We as a church have a responsibility to reach our area, North Ridgeville. Beyond our area, think about Elyria, Avon, even in Lorain, South Amherst, Grafton, Eaton Township, North Olmsted, Bay Village, Avon Lake, and even beyond that, to all around the world with the gospel. We have this responsibility. As a church body, we have a responsibility to get the gospel around the world. But at the same time, the flip side of the coin is this: we have to understand the importance of others helping us in this task. That's a big task, for the reach the world with the gospel. And so we can't simply just, let me put it this way, watch this. We need to avoid, now I want you to think with me about this, we have to avoid a pass-the-buck mentality. Sometimes we do that. Well, we can't do it. We're just a little church. We're just here in the middle of nowhere. We can't reach the world. We'll just, big churches will do it. Well, that's a pass the buck. We can't do that. We can't simply say, we're not, let someone else do it. The Lord has given this command when He said, go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. He gave to every believer that command. And by virtue of every believer, that means every group of believers, every local church has a responsibility to organize itself around this obligation to reach the world. And so we can't simply pass the buck and say, well, let Cleveland Baptist do it. They're a bigger church. Let First Baptist in Hammond do it. They're a bigger church. Let Temple Baptist down in Knoxville do it. They're a big church. Every single body of believers has responsibility to reach the world. So we have to take this personally and seriously, okay? So we need, we have to take the Great Commission as a personal command to our church. It's my command, it's your command, and together it's our command. It's both personal, individually, and corporately, because individually we make up this church. So we can't have a pass-the-buck mentality. But again, the flip side is this, because here's the other danger. We have to avoid a go-it-alone mentality. We don't need anyone else. We'll do it all ourselves. We don't need anyone. And let me tell you this. As much as I can say it's our responsibility, Grace Baptist Church cannot witness to 7 billion people in this world. But we have that responsibility. Now, think with me, because you're looking, your eyes seem to be spinning a little bit. You, as an individual Christian, have an obligation to get the gospel to 7 billion people. Now, how are you going to do it? You don't have enough time in the day. You don't have the resources. But yet, you have that responsibility. So what do? We link up, we hook up with fellow believers of the same mind, of the same faith, and together we try to accomplish this thing. And so that's where the idea of friendship comes in. So we have to avoid a go-alone mentality. We need as many fellow laborers working with us in God's harvest field. Now, we began this truth talking about friendship, by talking about biblical friendship. Now, I always have to stop and say this because I think some people get off track. Because we're not talking about hooking up with every Tom, Dick, and Harry, okay? We're talking about befriending fellow believers who hold to the same body of truth as we do. Now, I've got to be clear about this, okay? We're not talking about befriending false religions. That doesn't even make sense. Why would we hook up with the Muslims? You say, well, who's thinking that? You hear sometimes people talking about, well, all these religions need to come together. How can that work? When we're teaching one way to heaven and they're teaching a totally different religion. How can we reach everyone with the gospel when we all don't believe the gospel? So we're not talking about false religions. And watch this. Neither we're talking about befriending those who are wrong about salvation. We're not hooking up the Catholics. So, well, the Catholics, they believe in Jesus, but they don't believe in salvation by grace through faith. You tell a Catholic, how do you go to heaven? You go to heaven by joining the church, by taking the communion, by the seven different, top of my head, there's seven different sacraments, and by doing these seven sacraments, you earn His grace. Well, that's not the Bible grace. Bible grace is unmerited. You don't deserve it. God gives it to you freely. Well, how? How does He do that? By faith in Christ. Not by joining a church. Not by getting baptized. Not by doing good things. So how can I hook arms with someone who's teaching wrong about it? It's a danger. Sometimes you'll see some evangelists will do like a citywide revival. They'll bring all these people in, they get saved, and they send them back to the churches they came from, and some of those churches don't even preach the Bible. Well, that's not the answer. The answer is getting them saved and getting them Bible-preaching churches. That's the answer. So we're not talking about befriending false religions or befriending those who are wrong about salvation. And we're not talking about befriending those who have a different Jesus. Now, the Mormons may be good, moral people, but they don't believe in the same Jesus we do. They talk about Jesus a lot. But they don't. The Jesus they're talking about is not the Jesus we're talking about. A lot of times I'm not trying to be unkind to them. I think some of them, maybe they don't know, but some of them know that they're not talking about the same Jesus. And they're letting you think that. They use the word Jesus, they use Bible verses, but if you, and sometimes you got to work at it, you got to dig down and really get them and say, what do you mean by this? And you find out they don't mean what we mean. And so I'm not talking about joining up with people who believe different, who have different Bibles, different doctrine, different religion. I'm talking about there's fellow believers who believe like we believe, who believe this book, who believe salvation by grace through faith. We're on the same page. Now, we may do some things different. I mentioned this Wednesday, the church down in Mississippi, they start, for whatever reason, at 10:45. That's their morning service. I have no idea. Why would you start at 9:45? I think this makes my head hurt to try to think about 9:45. Why not 11? What? But, I mean, and they're particular. It is 10:45. They're real particular. It is 9:45. It's not 11. Now, that doesn't exclude them from friendship, okay? Kind of makes you kind of look at them weird, but it doesn't exclude them. Some people don't have, some churches like ours don't even have Sunday school. That doesn't exclude them. Some churches, instead of Wednesday night, they have Thursday night. That doesn't. We have a lot of area for preference. But when we agree on doctrine and we agree on the things that this body of truth that we've held to for centuries, then we ought to be able to hook up with them and work together to reach the world. And that's the idea of biblical friendship here. Now, within this topic of friendship, we come now to 1 Samuel 18 with this example of Jonathan and David, some things I think we can learn about biblical friendship. And really, if most people who know some things about the Bible, if you go to them and say, what do you think is a great example in the Bible of friendship? Probably 9 out of 10 would say David and Jonathan. They're just very famous that way. And so we're going to look at several lessons here. I think some things we can glean from it, maybe help us in our own understanding of truth, friendship, and world evangelism. Okay, here's the first lesson I want you to understand. We're going to go actually back to chapter 17. Let me read a couple of verses, explain it to you, and I'll give you the lesson. Back to chapter 17 of 1 Samuel. Now the Philistines gathered together their armies to battle, and were gathered together at Shoko, which belongeth to Judah, and pitched between Shoko and Azekah in Ephes-Damin, I guess it is. And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together and pitched by the valley of Elah and set the battle in array against the Philistines. So you had a Philistine army on one side, you had the Israelite army on the other side. Obviously you had Saul, who's the king, the head man of Israel, and you had one of his great soldiers was his own son named Jonathan. So you had Saul and Jonathan together with the Israelite army on one side, Philistine army on the other side. And the Philistines stood on a mountain on the one side, and Israel stood on the mountain on the other side, and there was a valley between them. Now, if you're familiar with this story, this is David and the killing of Goliath. And so the story begins with Jonathan involved with the army of Israelite opposed to the army of the Philistines. David shows up and becomes the great champion here and kills Goliath. Now, we'll get a little more into that, but here's the lesson and we'll build on it. Number one is this: friendships should be on purpose. In this story here in 1 Samuel 17, David and Jonathan were in the same battle. Now, in this particular battle, involved the Philistines and Goliath, very famous battle. But the truth is, there would be many more battles that they would be fighting together. This wasn't an end-all battle. I mean, you read it and they win the battle and the Philistines are whipped, but the Philistines don't go home and suck their thumb and say, we're not going to fight the Israelites anymore. They kind of regroup and they keep fighting the Israelites. So there's going to be many battles that Jonathan and David is going to be involved with, and so they had a friendship on purpose. Now, here's a couple of things I want you to glean from that. First thing I want you to understand, there are a lot of things different about David and Jonathan. Let's just take a moment. I'll take a drink of water. I'm going to ask you, what do you think? Give me some idea. What would be different between David and Jonathan? What do you think? Who said that? Age. Age would be different. Now, how do I know they're different? Well, Jonathan is already a soldier. He's already fought some battles. There's some history here. He's already been a kind of a champion. David is so young, he's not even a part of the army. That's one of the reasons when he shows up, his brother's like, well, what are you doing here? Go back and take care of the sheep. You're not old enough for this. So age was a big difference. Sometimes we look at David and Jonathan like, you know, maybe two kind of close to age. But there was a difference of age between the two. What was probably the other big difference? Who said that? Family background. What was David? A nobody. He was a little shepherd boy, right? And here's Jonathan, really the son of the king, a prince. He's already known as being this great soldier, so there's a big difference in their background. And so there's a lot of things different about David and Jonathan. So what brought them together? There's a lot of things that would keep them apart, but what brought them together? The thing that brought them together was they both wanted God's people to have the victory over their enemies. There's a purpose behind their friendship. It wasn't they liked the same football team. It wasn't they bowled in the same bowling league. There was a purpose, and that purpose, they both wanted something from the Lord to do something for God's people. We think about what should bring us together with fellow believers. It's the same idea that we both have this desire. When Brother Becker and I and Sarah and Heather went on our mission trip down to Mexico, we were in there's a mission church there, a church there that we're a part of, and from that we actually were with our missionaries, the Yaders, who were in another kind of branch of that to another mission work. But we began with that first church. And in fact, I preached, I think, on a Sunday night there or Wednesday night or something. One of the nights I preached there. Now, here's what really struck me. There's a lot of things different. Their food is very different. The weather's different. The smells are different. The way they live is different. The way they dress is different. The way they act. There's a whole lot. I mean, I can sit around and you almost feel like, you're in another country. We were. But I mean, there's so many things different. But you know what brought our hearts together? We believe the same things. We had the same Savior. We had the same Bible. We had the same focus about trying to reach the world. And that's what we're talking about. The thing that brings us together in biblical friendship is a purposefulness that we have about the Lord. Think of the same thing about that church in Mississippi. Sometimes it was like in another country as well. I mean, there's a lot of things different. You go down south, I'm not sure how familiar with maybe different parts of the country, but you go down south and they do things different down there. They just do things different. I don't want to say a whole lot, but you know what? What knits my heart to those people? I preached there Sunday night. Now, I've preached there before. It kind of cracks me up because this guy knows me. But anyways, he calls me Friday, I think it was, and asked me if I was preaching Sunday night. He asked me to preach Sunday night, and I said, sure, I'd love to. It's my mom's church. If I don't preach, my mom would get mad at me, and so I'm not looking to preach, but I know my mom wants me to, so I said, sure, I'd be happy to. And now he said, now, well, I don't know about you, but we still use the old King James. I said, well, good, so do I. That makes two of us. But you know what brings us together is that common faith. We have a lot of differences just because we live in different parts of the country. But there should be a purposefulness in our friendship that we have this same desire where we're working together for a common purpose here. Here's a second lesson I see. And that brings us to 1 Samuel 18. Let me read the verse again. Then I'll hit the button. And it came to pass when he made an end of speaking unto Saul, that the soul of Jonathan was knit with the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. Now, well, I'll just give you the point, I'll explain. Number two is this: God gives us friends to further his work. This verse 1 occurs in the narrative. If you're following the narrative, David is walking up holding Goliath's head. Blood's probably dripping out the bottom. His eyes probably rolling back, his lips are probably curled. And he's saying to Saul, whose son are you? And David's talking, and Jonathan seems to be kind of watching this, and he goes up, and what David was doing, the fact he's this great champion, he fought for the Lord, it knitted Jonathan's heart to David, and David's heart to Jonathan. And the truth was, they're going to need this friendship, and we'll see this down the road. So God gives us friends, I believe, to further his work. They're both in this same purpose and trying to go forward in this battle. Now, let me build on this a little bit. I believe there's a stewardship to our friendships, just like there's a stewardship to everything else the Lord gives us. In other words, we're accountable. I don't think God gives us friends when God gives you money, God expects you to use that money wisely. When God gives you abilities or talents, he expects you to use it wisely. I think the same thing is true of friendship. He believes expects a certain stewardship out of it. Now watch this statement. If our friendships are not furthering God's work, then we're not using friendships properly. Friendship isn't just to make you feel good. Friendship isn't just so someone can help you through the hard times. And there's nothing wrong with either one of that. But there's a bigger reason, the bigger reason God gives us friends to further His work. So I ask you this morning, consider those who are your friends. Think of some friends this morning. Does that friendship you have draw you closer to the Lord? That's a good question. I have this friend, does it draw me closer to the Lord? If not, maybe I'm not being a very good steward with my friendships. Is that friendship compelling us to obey the Lord? Is that friendship encouraging other good friendships and relationships? Does that friendship make us a better worker for God? Now, the hardest truth, you ready? I said this Sunday night, Church of Mississippi. They kind of looked at me cross-eyed, kind of like you're about to. Ready? The hardest truth to convey to people is this. Your happiness is not God's biggest concern. That surprises us. Because it's our biggest concern. I mean, we're focused on happiness all the time. What we eat, where we sleep, where we live. Our happiness is really high on our list of concerns. But it is not, I'm not saying God doesn't care. I'm not saying that God was not worried whether you're happy or not. I'm saying it's not number one on His list. Did you know that? You know what's number one on His list? His glory. His glory is more important than your happiness. Now, I believe there's a connection in the two, and I believe as you live for His glory, that's the source of joy and, in some ways, happiness. But if we're focused on our happiness, and this is where we get in trouble, we want friends in order to be happy. God wants you to have friends to further His work and bring Him glory. Now, you say, well, that's just what Pastor White thinks. Well, it is what I think. But here's why I think it. Revelation 4:11 says this, Thou art worthy, O Lord, to receive glory and honor and power. Now watch the end of this verse. For Thou hast created, what's the next two words? All things. And for Thy pleasure, they are and were created. Not my pleasure, His pleasure. So we're to exist to bring Him glory. So when I have a friend, if I have a friendship with someone and this friendship is not glorifying the Lord, then I need to say, whoa, wait a minute, there's a problem with this friendship. God gives me friendships to further His work, not just to make me happy. Now, watch this. Number three is this. God gives friends to help us through the difficulties of life. This is true as well. But I think this only plays out when we understand His glory comes first. Now we understand how it can benefit us. We see this in verse 2. And Saul took him, David, that day, and would let him go no more to his father's house. Then Jonathan and David made a covenant. That's important because he loved him as his own soul. Now, think about this statement. God knew that David would need a friend like Jonathan. Let's test your Bible knowledge. Why would David need Jonathan? There's no more Goliath. Goliath is dead. It's not really to fight a battle against the Philistines because David did pretty good on his own. What great thing did Jonathan do for David? Saved his life. Against who? Saul. King Saul, Jonathan's dad, was out to kill David very shortly. And it was Jonathan's efforts and Jonathan's work and Jonathan's, I'll use the word conniving, I don't mean that in a bad way, but his working behind the scenes that allowed David to escape. Now, obviously the Lord was in it, but he used Jonathan. And so God gave David this Jonathan friendship because He knew that Jonathan would play an important role. Think about this statement. Saul would prove even a greater enemy to David than Goliath. Think about that. A fellow believer in this way, a greater enemy than someone who's not a believer. That's kind of a sad statement. And David would need Jonathan's help to escape Saul's attempts to kill him. Now we see that later on in chapter 22 of 1 Samuel. You can read it on your own. But God gives us friends to help us through the difficulties of life. Now, just think about that for a moment. I have this friend. Now, the reason the Lord gave me this friend may not just so I'm happy. It may be because the Lord knows down the road I'm going to need this friend. So that's why I should be a good steward. I should choose friends that are godly friends. Because it may be that godly friend is going to help me through a difficult time in life. The Bible says this, there's a friend that is closer than a brother. And sometimes a good Christian friend sometimes is even a greater help in your life than even someone you're related to. They come along, they encourage you. Sometimes you have family members that don't encourage you. They may say, just quit church. It's not worth it anymore. But you have a godly friend that says, you know what, just stay faithful. Just trust the Lord. Just keep your eyes on Jesus. And that friend can be a great blessing. And so I believe this, that God gives us friends to help us through the difficulties of life. Let me show you number four. Number four is this. A true friend should want God's will more than his own success. Now, the next couple we're going to look more dealing with as in a church situation. We see this in verse number 3 of 1 Samuel 8. Then Jonathan and David made a covenant because he loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was upon him and gave it to David and his garments, even to his sword and to his bow and to his girdle. And in a way, what Jonathan is doing, Jonathan is recognizing that David is going to be king, or he's willing for David to be king rather than himself. He's acknowledging this, that I'm surrendering to you. I'm putting you first in this thing. He wanted the Lord's will more than his own success. Now, I'm going to shift gears. I'm going to apply this in a church setting, as a church befriending another church. Friendships to further world evangelism will require unequal sacrifices. What did Jonathan sacrifice for David? Really everything. His kingdom. Jonathan didn't fight David. Jonathan said, and you'll see this later again in chapter 22, if you're going to be the king, if that's God's will, so be it. I'll be your best supporter. I'll be your number one cheerleader, David. Now, Saul wasn't that way, but that's how Jonathan's heart was. What did really David do for Jonathan? Not a whole lot. I mean, there's not a whole lot recorded where David helped out Jonathan. They were friends, but really, the sacrifice was unequal. It was much more on Jonathan's side. Now, when we think about this idea of being friends with other believers and friends with other churches, sometimes we think, well, we all need to sacrifice equally, and that is not true. When we think about reaching this world with the gospel, now listen to me, some will make greater sacrifices than others. And sometimes we say, well, look at all that I'm doing. Look at all that we're doing as a church. They're not doing as much as us. And that may be true. But we can't say, well, when you do as much as us, then we'll do more. That's not the way you look at it. You say, we're going to do all that we can do. We're going to trust that you do all that you can do. What you do may be less than what we're doing, but we're going to work together to further this thing. We can't just say, well, look, we'll sacrifice equally, because there are going to be unequal sacrifices. Now, let me put it a little bit more bluntly. Every church should be more concerned with world evangelism than its own perceived success. Sometimes we want to keep everyone here, we want to keep all the money here, and we got to say, no, we can't do that. We got to send them out. We got to send people out across the world as missionaries. We got to send our money across the world to missionaries to reach the world. We can't just harbor and hoard everything here and say, well, we need a carport out there. We need a paved parking lot. We need more Sunday school class. We need to buy more buses. We got to say, okay, all that may be true, but we need to sacrifice to reach the world the gospel. It can't always be about us. And I got to move quickly here. Number 5. David would never have a friend like Jonathan if David didn't fight Goliath. That's an interesting statement. If David had sat on his hands, never fought Goliath, this friendship with Jonathan, as far as we understand, would never have happened. So what does that mean? Many of God's blessings are found in the path of obedience. This includes biblical friendship. People say, well, I don't have any friends. Let me ask you, are you doing anything for the Lord? You say, well, how does that get me friends? Just like it did for David. David didn't say, I'm going to get a friend. No, David said, I'm going to kill Goliath. And in the path of obedience, God gave him his greatest friend, Jonathan. Now think about what that means for us. It's in that path of obedience that we find many of these blessings that God gives us. Everyone wants a Jonathan as a friend. But everyone isn't willing to go out and fight Goliath. Think about that. Ready? Some of the greatest Christian friendships are formed in the yoke of Christian service. It's not that we set out to be friends with someone, we set out to serve the Lord. And someone else sets out to serve the Lord. And in together, we become friends. I have friends like that. You know why I know them? I know them because I'm trying to serve the Lord. They're trying to serve the Lord. It has brought us together and we've had a good friendship. It isn't saying, hey, I want to be that person's friend. It's, I want to serve the Lord. They want to serve the Lord. And the Lord brings us together. So that yoke of Christian service creates the opportunities to have some good, true biblical friendships. All right. Let me give you the conclusion. Think with me for a moment. Imagine what would happen if churches quit competing and started cooperating with each other. I'm talking about churches of like faith now. Imagine instead of us looking at them and saying, well, I don't know, they may be trying to steal our members. We got to be careful of those people. We got to say, how can we work together with these fellow churches and try to do what the Lord has us to do? Well, I'm sure what goes on with people. Maybe they say, well, maybe Doug Vogel will like, let me think of a church. Midway Baptist more than he likes our church, so we got to stay away from Midway Baptist. That's not the way you look at it. Okay? You can't build a church by trying to hold on to people. You build a church by living for the Lord. That's how you build a church. You live for the Lord. And sometimes people come from one church and they go to the other church, and that's sometimes right, sometimes wrong. But you can't worry and fret about that stuff. You got to say, we're not in competition. We're not competing against Midway. We're not competing against Victory. We're not competing against Cleveland Baptist. We're not competing against Faith. We're not competing against Liberty or whatever other church in this area. We're not competing against them. We're supposed to be working together, trying to do what the Lord would have us to do. So what does that mean? We as a church, Grace Baptist Church, need to take the Great Commission as our personal responsibility. Regardless of what any other church is doing or not doing. Then, as we do that, we have to befriend, encourage, and help any church of like faith that's also taking the Great Commission personally. I think this is one of the great lessons on friendship here. Working together, trying to do the work of God. And that's what you see in Jonathan and David. Coming together, trying to do the work of God together.